Welcome back, new talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is podcast 614. We're going to talk about Trump's Donnybrook, the failure of Congress to pass a repeal-only bill. Instead, they introduced a repeal and replace bill, which got bogged down. Friday, they had to pull the bill. There was no vote. There's not likely to be another approach on the Obamacare issue in this session, and perhaps not until after 2018. This is a huge defeat for Republicans. It's going to have significant impact going forward. It's probably one of the biggest examples of a broken political promise. So we're going to talk about it in podcast 614, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I want to say thanks to Ed Johnson at X Government Cars, who has sponsored the Bob Davis Podcast since day one, back in 2009. And I've had so much fun over the years with Ed. Have had three X Government Cars, three Crown Vics. I've talked about them several times. And of course, Ed was instrumental in getting me Mobile Podcast Command, which is a 2000 Ford Super Duty diesel ambulance that is so cool. I'm really looking forward, and I have my fingers crossed that I'll be taking that to Burning Man in September, late August and early September, out in the desert, I think by Reno. And that should be interesting. I'll know next Wednesday whether I get the tickets or not. It's a whole process, which I'll talk about when I finally get the tickets. But xgovernmentcars.com is the place to go. They are Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. Now, specific to that, I want to talk about Expeditions and Yukons, because he is getting a line on these really low mileage DHS and Border Patrol vehicles, Expeditions and Yukons, and they're super clean and they're awesome. And as I said many times, the holy grail for ex-government cars is getting one of these vehicles with low mileage. When I got my Crown Vic, it had 50,000 miles on it, and it now has 121,000. When you get them early, they run and run and run and run. I mean, they're great. I've had them at 83 and 90,000 miles, no problem. But when you get one at 50, it's like a brand new car. So you owe it to yourself, if you're looking for an SUV, why go out and spend, $75,000 when you can get a super cool former government vehicle, a Yukon or an Expedition from the FBI or the Secret Service or Border Patrol or, DHS or something like that. So the other thing is, if you need a car and you need a loan, you can get approved if you have a job. Ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest values every day. I've seen them do it. They have the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at ex-government cars. And of course, they are now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. Go online to exgovernmentcars.com. Look and see what they've got. They've got the Chargers. They've got the Impala V8s. They got the police, Ford police SUVs and Ford police sedans, which are in demand. And of course, the Expeditions and the Yukons and more at
xgovernmentcars.com.
Now, we won't talk about it in this podcast, but we're going to talk about the ACA repeal failure, the so-called repeal and replace failure that happened Friday in podcast time, and it's early in the morning on Sunday. But I just wanted to do a quick podcast about that, and we are, we're going to hear about it. That's these issues about trade. And if you are in business these days, if you're in the manufacturing business, you are probably considering bringing some of your manufacturing back to the United States. Some companies are preparing to do it. There are reasons to manufacture in the United States that go beyond trade issues. But if your company is considering American manufacturing, remember DepoStar, American design, engineering, and manufacturing right here in Minnesota. Visit their website at DepoStar.com. That's DepoStar, DepoStar.com, or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. It'll take you to DepoStar.com. Well, I haven't done a podcast in full stereo in a long time, and I've done their stereo podcast, but I use one mic. So it's been a while since I used two mics. So when I go over here, I'm on this side, and when I go over here, I'm on this side. And I love using these particular mics. I'm not going to say what kind they are, but I love using these particular mics together in stereo. And when I first started podcasting, I used to take the mics outside in the summer in full stereo And it was a wonderful experience. The reason that I don't always do podcasts in full stereo is it gets a little bit confusing and difficult with compression and making them loud enough to actually be transmissible over the internet, you know, so that you can hear it on a smartphone or you can hear it properly on the internet. Sometimes the biggest problems with podcasts is to get them loud enough so that they come through. So I'm going to try one in full stereo. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning, Saturday night, and I wasn't going to do a podcast tonight, but I've decided to do one. And part of it is that this has been a momentous weekend politically, because this is the weekend that the Republicans failed to pass what they called a repeal and repair or repeal and replace bill to replace the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And I just wanted to take some time and just talk about it without really full preparation. So some of the things I might refer to might be wrong, but I don't think that overall my assumptions are wrong. And I think for a lot of people, it's going to be very difficult to hear this podcast, because if you voted for a politician with an R in front of their name who said they were going to repeal Obamacare over and over and over again, if that's what you wanted, I can't believe there's any Democrats out there that wanted a full repeal of Obamacare or anything done at all with the ACA. So this would be mostly people who voted for Republican in the 2016 election, particularly for president. This is a breaking of a promise, and it's a breaking of a promise far higher than the level of read my lips, no new taxes, and far higher on the level of I can't really honestly think of anything. The only thing I could come up with tonight in some of the conversations that I had was that this rivals the Republican resistance to Lend-Lease just prior to World War II. And as you know, if you've studied history, Lend-Lease was the program that allowed the United States to send equipment and armament overseas, and it is largely the reason that one of the main reasons that the British were able to hold off the Germans and provide essentially what turned into an air base for the United States in World War II that eventually led to the defeat of Germany. And so Lend-Lease is one of those building blocks that saved civilization in the 1940s. And this was a battle which was by no means won or even foreseen to be won as late as 1944. In fact, if you read World War II history, you know that there was some consideration to pulling the D-Day invasion because of things were so bad, particularly at Omaha, that the United States considered pulling the invasion. And considered it, and really it was dicey there during the hedgerow battles, because we almost lost those. But that isn't the only time we almost lost World War II. But Republicans were, as you know, isolationists prior to World War II, and went down in history as really opposing, let us say, forward intervention to stop Hitler. Now, I don't know that it would have, but, it's very interesting that a lot of Republicans will put Churchill high on the list of people who were some of the greatest leaders of the 20th century. In fact, some have called Churchill the greatest leader of the 20th century. And, we essentially opposed intervention against Germany just prior to the invasion of Poland. So that's what Republicans, I think that this failure to repeal Obamacare is a breaking of a political promise that will go down in history. And what's fascinating about it is that the so-called Freedom Caucus, which were, pilloried for basically refusing to vote for what can only be described as really poorly assembled legislation rushed through committee, unfortunately lobbied hard for the president, lobbied hard for this bill. The entire Minnesota delegation fought hard for this bill. The only principled Republicans in the House were the Freedom Caucus. And the president at first blamed the Freedom Caucus and then started blaming the Democrats, which is silly because I can't imagine that anybody would have thought that a Democrat would vote to repeal the signature piece of legislation, Democratic legislation, in probably 20 years, which is a brand new entitlement called the Affordable Care Act. So the Affordable Care Act, in the words of Paul Ryan, will be a settled law for some time to come. And this is now really a substantive, substantial, incredibly significant political defeat by a president who, a brand new president, who is clearly a neophyte to the legislative process, struggling to assemble a cabinet, struggling to get nominations through Congress, his own Congress, a Republican Senate, a Republican White House, that has failed to come through on the greatest promise of the entire campaign. I think despite what Donald Trump's feelings or thoughts were about single-payer health, which he has advocated for, he strongly advocated for the repeal of Obamacare throughout the campaign, up to and including the debates with Hillary Clinton. And so that's now two predictions that I made that have come true. And I don't like to make predictions. I don't make them lightly. It was just before I headed out to go west. I spoke at the last time that I will speak to one of these groups, I spoke to a Tea Party meeting, and I said, you know, Donald Trump, of course, can win the presidency. And the Republicans should actually be more concerned if he wins the presidency. And I said, good luck repealing Obamacare. So that's two predictions. And the third prediction I made was that Donald Trump lose, hard to tell, but if he wins, he will end up destroying the Republican Party. And I really don't think that you can make too much of this failure by the Republicans to simply repeal Obamacare. That is what the people who voted for them want. Now, again, if you're a Democrat listening to this podcast, you know, I totally understand, you know, maybe a little bit of bristling to that statement. But the people who voted for Republicans voted primarily to repeal Obamacare. That was the main purpose behind their vote. That was probably the main reason most people voted. And, you know, this failure to repeal it started before Christmas when they started to talk about repealing and replacing. And then that kind of talk continued after the inauguration, this repeal and replace discussion. And suddenly people were like, well, wait a minute. I thought you said you were going to repeal it. And then it turned into repeal and replace. And the replace bill kept most of the mandates of Obamacare, and it turned into a mess. Not very good legislation. And so now everybody is just piling on, and they're saying things like, well, you know, if they can't repeal Obamacare, that would have been the biggest piece. And if they can't do that, then what about the wall? And what about tax reform? And what about this or that? And of course, the president, let me just say this, because this is what Trump should have done. Trump should have not tweeted anything. He should have gone out. He should have interrupted Sean Spicer, gone out to a press conference and just simply said, I just have something to say. I'm not going to take questions, but I'm just going to say this. This is my fault. I take responsibility for it. And I don't want to blame anybody. I'm not going to blame Paul Ryan. I'm not going to blame the Republicans. I'm not going to blame the Freedom Caucus. I'm not going to blame the Democrats. You know, we failed to get this bill across the line. We didn't close the sale. It's my fault. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to figure out what we're going to do from here. But I take full responsibility for this. But what did he do? He went out and he said, it's the Democrats' fault, which is a silly thing to say because Democrats never would have voted for this bill, regardless of who, you know, they could have resurrected Roosevelt from the grave to sponsor this bill. And they wouldn't have voted for it because this is the signature piece of their legislative effort over the last 8 years. They weren't going to vote for it. And Republicans had 7 years to come up with a replace bill if they'd wanted one. And they had 7 years to figure out how they were going to do this. And they had at least 6 years, last four election cycles, presidential and congressional. They had at least 6 years to sit there and figure out how this was going to happen. And they could not bring the party together. Why? People have asked me, this is what everyone's asking me. Why? What happened? How is this possible? And the answer is that the Republican Party has no principles. I did a whole podcast about it. It's called We Don't Need No Stinking Principles, because if I've heard one Republican or 100 Republicans, again, when you ask them what they stand for, they will all come up with different things. The Republican Party has lost its mooring. This is a party that was rooted in principle. It began in the 1856 election cycle as a highly principled political party that was committed to equality and anti-slavery. These were the two principles, and those are two of the best principles that you could ever have for the founding of a political party in history in the United States. And so the Republican Party has always been a party founded on principle, powerful principles, modern principles, liberty and freedom and markets and anti-slavery and equality. And this is a party that has completely lost its way in history. It has lost its principles. It doesn't know whether it believes in trillion-dollar stimulus packages or free markets. It doesn't know how to have free markets in the first place. It wouldn't know how to create free markets. It's committed to tax reform, but certain kinds of tax reform, keeping the mortgage tax credit, keeping certain subsidies. Literally, the policies are polyglot. And if there's three groups of Republicans, they are the moderates. These are the people that are in control of the House and the Senate. So Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, and others of that ilk. Then there is the Freedom Caucus, which is roughly 23, 24, 25 members, which, you know, I'm going to tell you is probably going to grow because they have now tasted blood and they're not going to stop. These are the people that actually have some principle because they actually believe that the Republican Party wanted to repeal Obamacare and they believed it and they voted accordingly. And then you have the libertarian wing, which is a very small wing of the Republican Party, which, you know, is the part of the party that believes in free markets. I think personally, the biggest problem in the Republican Party is, as my friends call them, the Christian-y Christians, the religious right, which cons good people into believing moderate Republicans, in other words, big government Republicans who had no intention of repealing Obamacare. Because they could wheedle out their medical tax bills. They could wheedle out their phases so that they would have something to talk about in the 2018 election cycle. They could continue to politic using this great desire to get government out of healthcare. Those are the people that really have no principles. And if you live in Minnesota, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because the Minnesota Republican Party is a classic example of principleless, rudderless fools, you know, headed for the waterfalls, because they will they'll talk about liberty and freedom, and they pass things like real ID, and they'll talk about, you know, budget conservatism, and they increase funding for Minsure, you know, or increase spending overall, or you hear them talking about liberty, and yet they will not simply pass a bill that eliminates permanently the Met Council. They just play games. They support things like having a council decide how much money they're going to earn, and on it goes. So the principle of saying we have to get government out of people's lives permanently, and I add permanently, because government power is pernicious. And if you're living in a construct of government intervention and what is essentially American socialism, and I believe we are, you're up against a tremendous challenge to get government permanently out of these spaces that it really shouldn't be in. like deciding for small towns how they should develop, or deciding for big cities how they should develop, or deciding that a train has to go through a part of town that the residents don't want it to go through, and on it goes. And it's not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's a liberty issue. It is an issue of pernicious and dangerous government power in the hands of politicians who have no principle. So that's first half of this podcast. That is what we're dealing with. And that is why I said the Republican Party has no principles. And that is why I said the word conservative doesn't mean anything. And that is why I said that the Republican Party is in danger of falling apart. And I really felt it that if they had allowed a floor fight, then either A, the party would have come around behind Donald Trump, including the people who are liberty-oriented, or B, they would have nominated somebody else, win or lose, but the party would have been newly forged under principles instead of nothing. And you have a president who has been described as a populist. I don't like the term populism because I don't think it describes any kind of political party. I think it describes political tactics. But I would put it this way. The president doesn't know what he is for or against because he could have sponsored a repeal bill only. He could have said to Paul Ryan, I want a repeal bill. I don't want a repeal and replace bill. I don't care what you have to do. We're going to fight for this. And I give you the example of Wisconsin, where Governor Scott Walker ran on the concept of getting unions out of the state and getting unions out of people's lives and giving local municipalities and counties control of their budgets. And they did it. And they did it under great duress. And they had a tremendous fight in Wisconsin. And the result of it was an enlarged Republican majority and two terms for Scott Walker and winning one recall vote. So he won three elections as governor of Wisconsin. Why? Because he stuck to his principles. And I don't think anybody would suggest that Wisconsin is a is some kind of Western red state like Texas. Wisconsin is a state that can go either way. Now, the reason that this did not go through is because there's a number of Congress. In other words, the reason a straight repeal vote did not go through is because you have a number of congressmen who are from plus six, plus three, plus four Republican districts in relatively purple states. And there are districts all over the country like this, Indiana, Illinois, where Republicans are serving, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and so on. And they are loath to take away an entitlement that would end up causing people to lose their health care. So they couldn't vote for a straight up repeal bill. Now, they could have been cajoled into it. If you had a president who was along the lines of Lyndon Johnson, as you know, was Senate Majority Leader for a number of years before he became vice president and then ultimately president. And Lyndon Johnson knew how to work the legislative process. Thus, he was able to pass civil rights and some other bills because he understood how to work it. Donald Trump thought he could go down there and cajole those guys into voting for the bill that he wanted, or supposedly he wanted, Ryan's bill. And the fact is that the members of Congress serve their districts. That's the way it's supposed to work. They have election certificates and they can do whatever they want, and they don't work for the president. They work for the people in their district, and they have the opportunity and the right to make their own decisions regarding how they're going to vote, and they don't give a damn what someone like Donald Trump says. And he learned, I hope, an important lesson. And he learned an important lesson in this debacle that can now join several other debacles that mark the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Donald Trump describes himself as a winner. His people go out and constantly say it's been the most successful first 100 days in history for a president. That is just simply not true. And certainly not true with the loss and literally a Donnybrook or a debacle that we have seen the Republicans suffer with the failure to pass an Obamacare repeal after they went out and said they were going to do it come hell or high water. And after, by the time, they have attempted 60 times to repeal Obamacare. They have any number of Obamacare repeal bills sitting on the shelf that passed before. All they had to do was pass one of those. Suddenly, they couldn't do it because suddenly now they're responsible. And I think it says a lot. Going forward, what are the lessons to be drawn from this for Republicans? I'm not talking to Democrats here. I'm talking to Republicans because I've been saying this for a long time, and I think it needs to be said again. We're not talking to I'm not talking to Democrats. So the thing Republicans do not understand that Democrats do understand is that when you vote, that's just the beginning. So if you go out and you vote for a candidate, I voted for Trump, okay? I voted for, you know, this congressman. By the way, I'm not telling you who I voted for. I'm just saying this is a person saying this. And they think that that's all they had to do is go vote and or show up at a rally at a hangar someplace. And they've done, they've raised hell because that's or show up at a protest someplace. That seems to be, from their perspective, all they need to do. They don't understand that for Democrats, voting and protests are the beginning. After that, there is organization and there is door knocking and there is phone banking and there is planning and there is working to keep pressure up on legislators to do their bidding. And this is what Republicans do not do. I read an interesting Facebook post this week from a local guy who runs one of the Tea Parties. And he said, and he's put this post up, I don't know how many times. It's nothing new. He's said this probably 20 times in the last 10 years. How dare these guys go and they get elected and they don't do what they say that they're going to do? How are we to expect that these people are going to do what they say they're going to do? Now, this is the same gentleman who has a meeting every week, and he gets up and his friend and he basically go through the same dog and pony show every week about the Constitution and, you know, free market and adherence to the Constitution and everything else, and tell everybody what they're doing and how much hell they've raised down at the Capitol and how these legislators are listening to them. And yet the legislators never seem to do what they say that they told them to do. That's the first thing. And I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and we were discussing this, and I said, hey, let me ask you a question. I went to the meeting, he said, last week, and yada, yada. And I said, let me ask you a question. How many people were at that meeting? And he said, well, there's 50 people there. And I said, was it new people? Oh, no, it was the same 50 people. Sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less. And I said, how many people live in the county where this meeting is held, do you think? And he goes, well, I think it's 800,000. I don't think it's 800,000. I think it's something like 350, but okay. So out of 350,000 people in the most conservative district in Minnesota, which is the sixth district, 50 people show up week after week after week. Not 50 new people, not 50 people this week and 100 people next week and 300 people the week after that and 500 people the week after that. 50 people week after week after week, year after year after year. The same people who sit in the chairs and listen to the same speech over and over and over again. The total population of the county is something like 350,000. And let's just say it's 500,000. So out of 500,000 people, 50 people come to this meeting week after week after week. And what's the demographics? Well, it's male, it's 50 plus, probably 65 plus, and that's the extent of it. Well, that is nothing. That is virtually nothing. And that is why they don't do what you think that they're supposed to do, because they are not listening to you. And the only way to get them to listen to you is to organize into a powerful organization that guarantees votes and money. Now, this organization and others like it have only been able to elect certain people from certain districts, which are 25 plus Republican or more. We're talking about Texas, Kansas, Indiana, Ohio, places like that. Not even places like the 6th district in Minnesota, which I think is a plus 6 or 5 district, meaning 5% higher than. So the winner of that congressional district race has a 55%, you know, win. So it's a 5% majority, basically. That's what you're dealing with. And until Republicans figure out how to organize, they're not going to have an effect on keeping the pressure up on the legislators that they elect. So they will elect these people. They will go down to Washington or down to St. Paul with the best, you know, hopes and interests in mind, and they will be corrupted. They will be moved from their position, whatever it is, because there is no one to keep them honest. There's not enough pressure to keep them honest. And they can't depend on anyone to go door knock for them. They can't depend on people to cajole and whip opposition at the local BPOUs and at the state conventions and so forth. So they've got to do what they've got to do to get votes, because they can't depend on so-called conservatives to actually do anything to make anything happen. Because conservatives suddenly now think if they do what the left does, which is protest, that that's going to produce results. But that's not what the left is doing. They're using protests to generate lists and telephone numbers and email lists, and they're getting meetup groups going, and they're getting people organized, and they're talking to people one-on-one, and they have people to show those people what to do and how to be effective politically, both locally and nationally and regionally. The Republicans do not have that. They don't have it from the state party. They do not have it from the national party, and it's an egregious lack of direction and help for local political organizations. And why is that? Why is that in Minnesota? And I'll tell you why. The state party and the people who run politics in the state of Minnesota, and you can extend this to the United States, do not want you, the grassroots, to have any power. They think you're stupid. They think you're wrong. And they don't listen to you. And I don't care if you voted for Trump. And I don't care if you have a Make America Great Again cap. And I don't care any of that stuff. It's meaningless. Once these guys get to Washington, they are at the mercy of these reptilian, moderate people who control the money and who control the votes and who control the agenda. And that's the way it is. And that includes the president of the United States, who is basically like a fish out of water right now, because he has just discovered the United States government is not a business. It doesn't work like a business. Politics is not a business. And you can't run it like a business, because you tell people to do things and they simply do not do what you tell them to do. You can make executive orders all day long, and they do not produce any result. Whether it's a broken promise like I'm going to close Guantanamo, which he issued an executive order to do, President Obama, and it's still open, or I'm going to prevent people that we don't like coming to this country, and I'm going to issue an executive order, and a district court judge can overrule the president. Because what he needs is he needs Congress to act, and Congress is not going to act. And let me tell you something else. The Freedom Caucus is only going to get stronger now that they have tasted blood, because they have brought this president to his knees because he wasn't listening to them. They said, we want a straight-up repeal bill, and they were the ones who were operating from principle. It's the moderates who are too afraid to go back to their districts and say, we're repealing this because the government should have no business in the insurance business. And the government should permanently be prevented from doing this. And we are repealing this. And by the way, we're going to go from this. They could, if they had won this and repealed it, they could say, we're going to go from this and we're going to reform Social Security and we're going to reform Medicaid and Medicare and we're going to make them privatized and we're going to start people at age 30 on their own plans, and the rest of you will be able to, you know, get your Social Security and your Medicaid and your Medicare money. But anybody under 30 is on some sort of new privatized plan. That's what'll make the stock market go to 30,000, something like that, instead of this kind of piddling around stuff. But see, there's no imagination because there are no principles. The principle of the idea of liberty, meaning we aren't going to have the government in this kind of business. We are going to sweep away these 1950s sclerotic government ideas, 1930s sclerotic socialist government ideas, and replace them with market-driven ideas. But we have to investigate those ideas. We have to think about those ideas. And we don't, because you go to political meetings in this state, in my state, and people say, oh, I went to see Congressman so-and-so speak, and he is so knowledgeable about the education system, and he's really fighting for these young women who are being, you know, accosted by men at the malls and taken off to be prostitutes. He's really fighting for the, as though that is legal. And it was, and suddenly they're making it illegal. These are nonsense issues when we are facing twin deficits, you know, enormous public deficits due to entitlements. These are ridiculous issues. So first, you have to have some idea of creating an organization that is designed to generate votes and money to put pressure on these politicians. But before you can do that, you have to have principles that you can flesh out with academic understanding, and you can teach people arguments, because that's my other criticism of Republicans, and I've made it before many times. They don't know the issues. They don't know the details of the issues. They can't argue the details of the issues academically. They can't argue the issues of the details of the issues in a balanced fashion. They don't know the arguments from the other side, because all they do is read Breitbart and watch Fox News. Aside from the fact that people thinking that if they watch television, that somehow that's going to educate them on the issues, or read a few news stories from the Wall Street Journal or Breitbart, or The Hill, and somehow that's going to give them details about issues. It isn't. You have to know the details of issues in order to fight politically for issues so that you can go door to door and speak respectfully and speak knowledgeably about an issue. And when you can't do that, how are you going to argue with Kurt Dowd, the Speaker of the House of the state of Minnesota, or Paul Ryan, for that matter, or anyone, or a Democrat who knows better than you the issues? How do you argue right to work, for example, if you go door to door, if you don't know the issue of right to work and what it means? How do you argue against real ID if you don't understand the parameters of the real ID issue? How do you argue for the repeal of Obamacare if you don't understand the details of what the act is and how it works? And all you can say is, well, it was a conspiracy and they had it put together. They spent 7 years putting it together. Well, you know, my response to that is, you know, that's the latest argument that I've heard. Well, you know, the Democrats had 7 years to put Obamacare together, and that's why they were able to pass it so quickly. No, that's not why they were able to pass it so quickly. They had a majority, and when Democrats have a majority and they say they're going to do something, they are beholden to their supporters through networks of organizations that force those congressmen and senators to do what they say that they're going to do. And they had a president who spent weekends holed up at Blair House with contact groups working on specific votes by specific congressmen to find out what needed to be done. What did Trump do? He sat in a semi-trailer and honked the horn and ballyhooed himself because he thought all he had to do was walk down to the White House and make a few statements and bluster around, and those guys were going to vote for what he wanted them to do because he thinks they work for him. They don't work for him. They work for their district. They work for the people of the United States. They have an election certificate, and they can tell Donald Trump to stick it up his ass if they want, and he has nothing and can't say anything about it. And the Freedom Caucus did just that. So where do Republicans go from here? First of all, blaming isn't going to get the job done. Second of all, if you want to blame somebody, blame yourself, because where are the contact groups to keep members honest and not contact groups to be telling Trump people that they need to call their congressman and tell their congressman to vote because the president is your guy? That's not going to do it. It's contact groups that have representatives that bring money to Washington and sit down with these guys and say, this is what my, who are lobbyists and who say, this is what my people want. We want a repeal of Obamacare, and here's why, and here's the arguments, and let me help you, sir, with that, instead of calling congressmen and yelling at them. Because you know what they do with those calls? If they write them down at all, they throw them in the trash. And if they don't write them down, they just put the phone on the desk while you go on and on about the latest thing in Breitbart or the Drudge Report. That's not lobbying. And people need to understand that. And the best lobbying groups, NRA, GOCRA in Minnesota regarding Second Amendment rights, those are the kinds of organizations that quietly lobby, and they, in no uncertain terms, tell members, Democrat and Republican, if you vote against this bill, then you're going to suffer the consequences. So that's where the recriminations have to start, is with the individual Republican and the quote-unquote conservative who hasn't done their homework and who hasn't put enough effort into organization. You know, just one more thing. I mean, in the state of Minnesota, they've already decided that they want to get rid of the caucus system. Well, they're cutting you off at the knees if you're part of the grassroots. You know, they're trying to prevent you from having control because the guys who run the state party in Minnesota are the rich guys in Minnetonka and in, I don't know, one of the richer suburbs of St. Paul. That's who runs the Minnesota Republican Party, is rich guys from Minnetonka and, places like that. And those are the guys that they don't want you involved because they want, it's the Bob Cummins of the world and others who run things in this state. And until they are overthrown, they're going to continue to go down the moderate path because that's how they operate. And if you want to defeat them, you have to raise more money than they do, and you have to push them out of power, and you have to do it quietly so they never know what hit them. That's what you have to do. And that's an enormous task to get that done. And, that's what's ahead of people who want to be Republicans. I do think that if Donald Trump doesn't do something significant in terms of changing his approach to what he is doing as president, that he is going to end up very embattled. He is going to end up causing a lot of problems for the existing Republicans in the House and Senate. And he may very well destroy the Republican Party, but that's my third prediction, and we will see. But so far, I've got two. I said he could win. I said that I thought he would win. And I also said that they would not pass Obamacare. Now, they might yet pass an Obamacare repeal, not pass Obamacare, but pass an Obamacare repeal. They may yet do that, but it won't be in this session. So it's hard news for people to hear, but let's talk about what needs to get done instead of blaming Paul Ryan or blaming the Democrats or basically repeating what somebody on Fox News said. Why don't Republicans go to work to figure out what's wrong instead of repeating what someone else says all the time? Well, this has been a great little stereo podcast. I hope it sounds better. I don't know. You know, it's kind of complicated to do, by the way, but let me know what you think. I love doing them in stereo because they sound so more alive and so much more real than just one microphone in stereo. So it's basically, when you use one microphone, it's mono in stereo. But this is two microphones, you know, right, left, in full stereo. So don't forget xgovernmentcars.com. They've got the fleet-maintained government vehicles, the Expeditions and Yukons from DHS and Border Patrol, as well as the Crown Vics while they last, and the Ford Police sedans and SUVs, the Dodge Chargers, which are in great demand, the Impala V8s, which are in great demand. Check them out at xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And I have to tell you, as the weather gets warm, you're going to start seeing motorcycles, and you're supposed to see motorcycles. And if you ride, you know how important that little bumper sticker phrase is. But if you ride, I want you to check out Ciro3D.com. This is a company that produces great motorcycle products and accessories. I've talked about the lighting options, which are great. They also have super cool things like the most awesome phone holder or iPad holder or phone holder that you can get. I've checked this thing out, and it is so cool and strong. It'll literally crush your phone, so it's worth checking them out. Don't forget the lighting options for safety and coolness and happy spring and ride safe. Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com, or go directly to Ciro3D.com, Ciro3D.com. Thanks again for you guys subscribing on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn. Stitcher does weird things with the podcast. I advise people to subscribe right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Listen to the streaming on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or subscribing at iTunes. We have Stitcher and TuneIn for Android devices, also blogtalkradio.com. And thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, my favorite social media. And of course, thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Getting ready for summer operations. Burning Man will be a part of that, hopefully. The Air Show, Sturgis, and more. Keep listening for more information on the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 614. I can't believe it's that high. Podcast 614, Trump's debacle. Trump's Donnybrook. Trump's congressional beatdown and more. And I'm sorry I don't mean to be giddy. It's just very interesting what's happening, and I'll be covering it again in the future. But thanks for listening to Podcast 614 Bob Davis Podcasts.
What they do, they smile in your face.